Sarah lived to be 127 years old. She died at Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went to mourn for Sarah and to weep over her. Then Abraham rose from beside his dead wife and spoke to the Hittites. He said, "I am a foreigner and a stranger among you. Sell me some property for my burial site here, so I can bury my dead." The Hittites replied to Abraham, "Sir, listen to us. You are a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will refuse you his tomb for burying your dead." Then Abraham rose and bowed down before the people of the land, the Hittites. He said to them, "If you are willing to let me bury my dead, then listen to me and intercede with Hebron, son of Sohar, on my behalf. So he will sell me the cave of Machpelah, which belongs to him and is at the end of his field. Ask him to sell it to me for the full price as a burial site among you." Hebron the Hittite was sitting among his people, and he replied to Abraham in the hearing of the Hittites, who had come to the gate of his city. "No, my lord," he said, "listen to me. I give you the field, and I give you the cave that is in it. I give it to you in the presence of my people. Bury your dead." Again Abraham bowed down before the people of the land, and he said to Hebron in their hearing, "Listen to me if you will. I will pay the price of the field. Accept it from me, so I can bury my dead there." Hebron answered Abraham, "Listen to me, my lord. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver, but what is that between you and me? Bury your dead." Abraham agreed to Hebron's terms and weighed out for him the price he had named in the hearing of the Hittites, 400 shekels of silver, according to the weight current among the merchants. So Hebron's field in Machpelah, near Mamre, both the field and the cave in it, and all the trees within the borders of the field were deeded to Abraham as his property in the presence of all the Hittites who came to the gate of the city. Afterward, Abraham buried his wife Sarah in the cave in the field of Machpelah near Mamre, which is in Hebron, in the land of Canaan. So the field and the cave in it were deeded to Abraham by the Hittites as a burial site.
Well, we're nearing the end of our sermon series on Abraham. There's only, I think, three more after today. But this week we're going to lose the central character in, or one of the central characters in the story of Abraham, his wife, Sarah. They'd been through a lot together, some of it centred around Abraham's nephew, Lot. But she'd had a good innings, and she's had the distinction of being the only woman in the Bible whose age was given. Not sure if that's good or bad, really, especially if your age is 127, when she died. She was first mentioned right back in Genesis 11, when she was introduced as Abraham's wife, but she was defined right from the start as being barren. They'd had no children. You remember that when Abraham got the call from God to move to the promised land, he was 75 and Sarah was already 65. So they may already have had 50 years of marriage, assuming that we don't know when they got married, but it was normal for girls to get married at about the age of 15. So you know, they could already have had 50 years of marriage at that point. Sarah's name means princess, so she was, I guess, destined for stardom in some way. And clearly she was a beautiful woman, despite her age. We heard how when Abraham had to go to Egypt to escape a famine, Pharaoh recruited Sarah into his harem. Abraham had sort of passed her off as his sister. But when the deception was uncovered, Sarah was released and they were allowed to go. And later on, a similar event with King Abimelech, who was stunned by Sarah's beauty. And again, Abraham claimed that she was his sister. And actually, there was a half-truth there, because she was actually his half-sister. They had the same father, but different mothers. And again, they got away with it, and Abraham was allowed to leave. And not only that, he was awarded damages for offence caused of 1,000 shekels of silver. They had their family troubles, as I've mentioned, often centred around Abraham's nephew Lot. They had to rescue him from the king of Sodom, and they had to rescue him when Sodom and Gomorrah themselves were destroyed. You remember that Lot only escaped by the skin of his teeth. And together they'd accumulated wealth. They had quite an entourage. But Sarah still had no children. So when God promised Abraham that he'd be the father of a great nation, she was, to say the least, a bit sceptical. There was no sign of any children. And, well, the biological clock was ticking, wasn't it? Remember how Sarah took it on herself to hurry God's plan along by having Abraham sleep with Hagar, resulting in the son Ishmael. But that wasn't in God's plan. And all it caused really was resentment, it caused upheaval, and finally it caused the banishment of Hagar and Ishmael. And then finally, Sarah becomes pregnant and they have their only son, Isaac. By which time Abraham's 100 and Sarah is 90. Last week we heard about the way that Abraham was tested. God asked Abraham to sacrifice his own son. It isn't recorded whether Sarah actually knew what God had asked of Abraham. But you can only imagine the conversation, can't you, that night as Abraham prepared to leave with Isaac. And the joy when they came back, both of them, they returned safe and well some days later. And so we come to Sarah's death. She was 127. So if we count back, that means that at that time, Isaac was about 37. And as yet, unmarried. That story is still to come. So assuming she was married, or they were married when she was 15... their marriage lasted 112. Even more impressive than Herbert and Zalmyra Fisher, who only managed to portray 86 years. So what was the secret of Abraham and Sarah's marriage? Well, perhaps we get a little bit of a clue in 1 Peter chapter 3, where it's talking about wives and husbands. Sarah may have been beautiful physically, but she was also beautiful inside. She had a sort of visible purity, a reverence, gentleness, a quiet spirit, and she was submissive. And Sarah is named in that passage in 1 Peter as the example of this. So theirs was a lasting marriage, and if you'd interviewed them before Sarah's death, they may have given similar answers to the Fishers. Perhaps it was respect and support, communication and honesty that held them together. Certainly faith played a part, didn't it? They both feared God and they both trusted him. And love, of course. We can see that from Abraham's reaction to Sarah's death. We don't know the actual circumstances, but Sarah died at a place called Kiriath Arba, which is in Hebron. And Abraham wasn't actually there. It may have been a sudden death, may have been unexpected. It may have been a shock to Abraham. And certainly he went to weep over her. He wept over her. No shame in a grown man shedding tears over the loved one, loss of a loved one. Perhaps it's not the thing for us Brits, is it, with our stiff upper lip and our suppression of emotion. But we have a very good example to follow. Jesus wept. John 11:35, which I'm sure you all know is the shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept at the death of Lazarus, even though he knew what he was going to do to Lazarus. So Sarah's died, and now Abraham's got a problem. Where do I bury my wife? Despite his intense life and all the possessions he'd accumulated, that was where he was living. In tents. Sorry. He had no land of his own. He was a stranger and alien in the land of Canaan. The older translations say he was a sojourner. That's not a word that we use very much nowadays. But he had no land to call his own. So he had a choice. He could have chosen to return back to his ancestral home in Ur. And in fact, if you look back into chapter 22, you'll see that he's recently had news from home of new relatives that he's had. His brother had produced some more children. He would have known that he would have been welcomed back at his ancestral home. But no, Abraham was going to hang on to God's promises, because you remember that he'd promised that one day the land where he was now living would belong to him and his generations to come. So it was natural he'd want to be buried there, in a place where his descendants could join him. It was going to be a burial place for, say, generations to come. The term that's used in a number of places here is that he would be gathered to his people when he died. And that's almost literally what would happen in that culture. He'd be buried in the cave, the body would be kept separate, and then some years later, after it had fully decomposed, it would actually be brought and mixed with those of previous generations. So literally, gathered to his people to face the future together. So Abraham's decision to purchase a grave or a cave where he was in Canaan was another great example of faith, wasn't it? God had promised Abraham the land, so Abraham knew it was the right thing to do. Abraham had bought into the plan God had for him. God had delivered so far with the beloved son born in his old age, and Abraham had proved his faith in the matter of Isaac's sacrifice. God has a plan for each one of us. Have we bought into it? Are we still waiting for God to deliver for us? Or are we living our life in faith that God will take us where he wants us to go? Having made the decision to stay, now Abraham's faced with a practical reality, isn't he? There's no suitable grave site that he owns, so he needs to purchase one from the locals. And we now get a detailed account of that purchase. And I guess it has to be important, because that chapter is headed The Death of Sarah. And actually, the death of Sarah is actually covered in the first two verses. So we've got 18 verses that go on about the transaction. So we guess it has to be important. So we'll try and pick it through and see what we can learn from it. Now, I don't know about you, but when I go abroad, I absolutely hate having to bargain or to barter for things that you buy at markets. I cannot stand it. I don't know if you are the same. I know some people really enjoy it. I cannot stand it. I'd much rather have a fixed price on something and know what it's actually going to be worth and what I'm going to have to pay. I think, I don't know about you, but I always feel ripped off, no matter what sort of bargain you get to. You always think, I'm sure he would have gone lower. And it's embarrassing, isn't it? Where do you start? And when do you have to give in? So I say, I'd far rather have a set price and know what something is worth and what I'm going to have to pay for it. But that isn't the culture now, and it wasn't the culture then, particularly in that Middle Eastern area. So you have to embrace it, don't you, when you go abroad. Abraham had to enter into a negotiation with the locals. In this case, it was the sons of Heth. Now, this may or may not be the Hittites that we're used to. We hear a lot about and was used in the passage here. There's a little bit of disagreement, perhaps, of whether the sons of Heth were the same. We'll call them Hittites just for clarity or for simplicity. So let's go through this whole negotiation. Abraham starts by setting out his initial statement. I'm a stranger, I'm an alien, I've got no land of my own. Please sell me a property for a burial site. And the Hittites' response to that, well, it starts with a bit of flattery, doesn't it? You are a mighty prince. They knew of his reputation, actually. So bury your dead in the best of our tombs. Which on the face of it sounds like a generous offer. But actually, Abraham would then be indebted to them, wouldn't he? Forever, really. And there would be no sort of future security if he just used their burial sites. What was to stop the Hittites then selling that field and the contents? So there's no security there. So Abraham couldn't accept that offer, which actually may not have been a genuine offer anyway. But Abraham shows respect. He bows before the people. And remember, this is being done in public by the city gate where the elders of the city would meet. And so he asks, please ask Ephron, son of Zohar, to sell me the cave of Machpelah, which is at the end of his field. I'm willing to pay full price for the cave. So Abraham's narrowed it down about, he's actually got, narrowed the request down. He's got a specific cave in mind. And the Hittites' response to that is, well, you can have the cave and the field for nothing. Again, this is part of that negotiation. But again, Abraham, in fact, no self-respecting man would accept such an offer of both. And both Abraham and Ephron know it. Note that the deal has actually expanded now. It was just the cave to start with, but now it's the field and the cave. And that's actually for tax purposes, even in those days. Because the two of them go together. The person who would actually own the field would actually be responsible for the taxes. Even if they sold part of it, they would still be responsible. So giving the field and the cave would pass that responsibility on to Abraham. So Abraham's response to that, well, I'll agree to that. I'll take the cave and the field, but at the agreed price. And then full title of it would then be transferred to Abraham. Well, Ephron clearly isn't a mug. And he's got Abraham hooked. So he quotes a price of 400 shekels of silver, which is actually exorbitant. When you compare it with other land deals in the Bible, if you look at Jeremiah, he only had to pay 17 shekels for a field that he acquired. But having offered the field for free, it would really be churlish of Abraham then to haggle over that price, wouldn't it? And Abraham could afford it. Remember the 1,000 shekels that he was given by King Abimelech. So the deal is done. Money's paid in public. The deeds are signed and handed over. And now Abraham owns a plot of ground in the promised land. The grave is established and Sarah is buried there. In future, she'll be joined by Abraham himself, Isaac, Rebekah, his wife, Jacob, Jacob's wife Leah, and probably many more through the generations. So, are there any principles we can learn? I think the one that comes out is sort of humility and respect. Abraham was a wealthy man. He was a powerful man. And he knew from God's promises that actually he was going to overcome these local people in the future anyway when God's plan moved forward. But he didn't sort of steam in there showing his power with his massive ego demanding that they would do what he said. Instead, he showed dignity in the way that he bartered with the Hittites. He showed respect for them. And that was actually respect despite knowing the sort of people that these Canaanites were. Maybe that is where the lesson is for us today in our world. Isn't there a lack of respect? We see a lack of respect between generations, don't we? We see lack of respect for those who are different because of their colour or their race or their sexual orientation. We see a lack of respect for morality. We see a lack of respect for property and a lack of respect for another point of view. So if you dare to stand out from the crowd by expressing our opinion, we become bigots, don't we, and arrogant. And actually that's a real problem for Christians, because we believe that there is only one way to God, through Jesus. So perhaps it's better for us to be powerful witness for Christ by the people we are, not just the things that we say. Like Sarah, we can make a difference by being beautiful people. And I don't mean by putting flowers in our hair, but demonstrating Christian qualities of respect and love, of dignity and justice, of caring and support, and hope and faith. I could go on, couldn't I? You know the list. Abraham and Sarah's marriage was an example to us, not only through its longevity, but through the love and the respect and the tolerance. They grew together to trust God for their future. And when it was over, Abraham made respectful arrangements for them to be together after death in a shared grave. Well, for Christians, God has made similar arrangements. As we know from John 14, that's the passage that's often quoted, isn't it, at funerals. In my Father's house, there are many rooms. And we will be taken to one of these rooms to be with him forever in the place that he's prepared for us.